Welcome back, interweb friends. This is Stop the Movie. I want to get out. Hollywood makes bad movies. We make fun of them. I'm Alex Dunbar. I'm here this week with Cody Wolf.
Where is everybody?
Skeleton crew. We had a whole bunch of the regular guys get called into work on short notice. So it is the two of us taking you through The Amazing Spider-Man 2, the new Amazing Spider-Man. This gets very confusing, and there was confusion on this even within the group as to, is this a Spider-Man 2 with Dr. Octopus?
The Sam Raimi one is, that's just Spider-Man 2. This is The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
This is The Amazing Spider-Man 2. And the Sam Raimi Spider-Man 2 is a pretty good movie. Mm-hmm. This is not. This is not a good movie.
Could have been.
It absolutely could have been. This movie is so dense, and I'm going to steal a quote Cody had that he texted me last night. He said, there are 1,000 subplots, but no main plot. And that's where it makes this movie so hard to talk about, because it's just endless, like, subplots kind of going out there, but
right.
So little really holding it all together.
Well, because your main character, Spider-Man, doesn't really have much motivation at all for anything.
No.
He's just kind of existing and just like doing the Spider-Man thing while everybody else has...
Things are happening around him.
Right.
Yeah, he's not really driving any of the events that happen in this movie.
And he's not just driven by any of the events. Basically.
Not really. Yeah, he's just responding to things that happen to him. And before we rip this movie apart, because we're going to rip it apart, I do want to pay it a weird compliment in that I... liked in particular the performances in this movie. I liked Andrew Garfield a lot.
I think he's good. Yeah, I think he's good in it.
I thought he was really good, and I liked
Emma Stone. I thought she was great.
Yeah. I thought she was great. And I liked Sally Field, even though she doesn't really do anything in the movie.
They kind of forced something for her to do, and it didn't make any. There was no payoff for it.
It didn't make sense, but I liked what she like. And it's funny because like I could sit here and talk about how much I liked those three performances all day, but talk about how terrible I thought this script was and this movie's basic structure was.
I thought Paul Giamatti was really good too, though.
Did you? Yeah. I don't know why. But, well, I'm guessing Paul Giamatti agreed to be in this, like thinking like I'm going to get in on this franchise and make a lot of money.
Yeah.
So we'll get into it. But all the way through, like I mean, Andrew Garfield. I thought really captured like a lot of the kind of humor and fun that Spider-Man is, you know, and in his personality. Because Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man more than anything else, is a funny superhero. And I never felt like you really got that with Tobey Maguire.
Yeah, there's no wisecracking or anything as Spider-Man with those ones. But
and he's a natural, like Andrew Garfield is very natural in doing a lot of the comedy bits in this movie. There's actually some stuff that probably shouldn't work that he saves due to just in the performance of it.
My problem, though, was that, and it was the script, is just that as Spider-Man, he's funny and witty and whatever, but whenever he's Peter Parker, it's like brooding and very not funny at all. Like he's just kind of whiny. I don't want to say whiny.
And very unmotivated, too, because that's where you get into the problem of he's not at any point driving the movie's plot. He's just responding to it. So he's super brooding, and you're also kind of like, well, do something about
it. Yeah.
Like, be, you know, and again, this is a comment on the script, let your main character actually develop over the course of the movie. All right, so we'll get right into it. The opening is mind shifting. You get this really elaborate opening, not with Spider-Man, but with the character who were, I guess you're supposed to understand it's Richard Parker, Peter Parker's dad, and that this is a flashback. He's on a private jet.
He's in a lab, and there's the
spiders. He's in a lab.
He's got some, I don't know what he's doing. I can't remember.
Something.
He's got like a computer. He's like downloading stuff on the computer or entering something. I can't remember. He's doing something in the lab, and then like an alarm goes off.
And I'm like, he's trapped in the lab. No, he's not trapped in the lab. He just walks out of the lab. And then he's on a plane, trying to download a file.
Yeah.
And then like a guy comes walking out of the pilot's
cockpit.
Yeah, that's I guess that's what they call
the
it.
The pilot's room.
I was like, the pilot's room? That doesn't sound right. Nope, they call it a cockpit. Yeah. and he's clearly a threat, which now I'm immediately like, well, this is already
he comes
dumb.
Out.
Why would
he
they
comes
wait
out
to...
and is washing blood off his hands in front of Richard Parker? Like, yeah, why, I'm why like, wouldn't well, he wipe that off before you?
Yeah, obviously, like, the most suspicious thing right. possible. And meanwhile, like, Richard Parker's like, okay, got to start uploading this file. But I'm also like, why did they wait till they're in midair to take care of it? Why didn't they just...
Yeah, because like, it shows him going home first. He goes home and says bye to Peter.
Yeah.
And him and his wife then go to the plane, you know, the airport or yeah. whatever, and get on
get
the plane.
Them on the
so
plane.
They could have uploaded any at any point.
And also, like, if you're the bad guys, yeah, just don't let the plane take off. You've got him right there.
Right.
You're right there. You're fine. You have, like, this is all... This is where it just gets very silly and... It's a big buildup of is this, you know, that he has to shoot a, Richard Parker has to shoot a hole in the window. The plane is crashing. It appears that, you know, his wife, Peter Parker's mother, is dead. And like, is this file going to upload? Is it not going to upload? It's, you know, oh, file transfer complete, you know, which is supposed to be a big moment, but you're just kind of like, okay.
Yeah, because you still really, like, I really don't understand still what that was all about.
I really don't. And again,
was,
you're like,
not important.
Is this a Spider-Man movie? Like,
yeah,
you know,
it was
okay.
so unimportant to anything that there was no point in even showing it.
There's no point. Well, and I we'll get into this later on, too. My understanding is this movie shifted directions dramatically in post-production.
Oh, obviously.
If anybody who's seen it, that's probably not a big surprise. And apparently one of the big plot lines of the original shooting script of this movie was Oscorp and all this surveillance and
well,
the stuff
yeah,
with the
there's,
dad.
There's a line in the... trailer where Harry Osborn says something to Peter Parker like, oh, Oscorps have been surveilling you.
Yes, yes.
And he's like, why? And he's like, oh, that's the $1 million question, whatever he says. And it's like, that is no, there's no paranoia moment at all in this movie where Peter Parker
no
is under
hint.
Surveillance or
yeah,
it's even suggested that he's under surveillance. Like,
yeah, there's
beyond the, Harry Osborn, it's like no one there even knows who he is.
Yeah, whatever this, that storyline is, yeah. yeah, they
so obviously
to,
that was shot and everything and just cut out.
And he's just gone.
Yeah,
yeah. We now get some shots of Spider-Man swinging through New York City, which looks good, not great.
Yeah, not great.
I mean, it looks...
We watched the trailer for the Sam Raimi Spider-Man last night, and I was like, it looks a lot better back in 2002 than it does now, because it's like so over the top now with CGI and stuff that it's just so video gamey.
It feels very video gamey, and some of it felt like they didn't get to... I wonder if some of the special effects guys didn't get to do some of the lighting, some of the full rendering and lighting effects they wanted to do because it looked a little unfinished to me.
Yeah, I think part of it too is like everything is CGI, like all the whole scene is CGI. I think in the original, you know, the first series, it was more plate shots of New York City and then CGI Spider-Man in, so it's more
right.
realistic looking. And here it's just like everything CGI, so it all looks like a cutscene from a video game.
Yeah, this didn't. I wanted to like this more, and it just. And by doing, they're doing a lot of like flying camera stuff too, where I almost feel, you're right, by doing actual camera work and then putting in CGI, it grounded it a little
yeah.
bit more. It was just sort of like, well, this is impressive, but it didn't feel grounded in anything.
Right.
Eh. And so Andrew Garfield is trying to stop Paul Giamatti. Who's trying? I don't even know what he's trying to do. Fully, I don't know. Oh, he's
I
trying
know.
To steal
Again,
something.
He had some, like,
chemical
something or other in like vials.
He's
in,
trying
like,
to steal
in, like
some
an armored
chemicals.
Truck.
And so he needs to stop that, but he also needs to get to his high school graduation. By the way, just a note to Sony, like. You don't have to have Peter Parker be like a high school student. Like Andrew Garfield's 31. He's a fantastic Peter Parker. Like you could have just had him be like a young man, which is what
right.
Marvel Comics has been doing for years and years and years. He
yeah,
didn't
yeah.
have to be a high school student.
Right.
Because it's a little goofy to have a 31-year-old playing a high school senior.
Mm-hmm.
And Emma Stone, who again is fantastic. She doesn't look like a high
right,
school student,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
but that's just, I don't know, maybe I'm nitpicking, but I was just like, what a weird choice.
Yeah.
to. So he's got to get to his high school graduation.
Also, he's got his cell phone on him for some reason. And
yeah.
for some reason, his cell phone ring is the Spider-Man theme.
Yeah, I got a chuckle the first
time. I got a
chuckle
the first
that,
time, but
yeah.
the sixth time, I was like, okay.
Yeah, I didn't need it to come
anymore.
Back after that. Yeah.
So he's like, during this high speed chase, and he's like, attached to the front of a truck that's going through the city at 100 miles an hour. He's like talking to her on the phone and like, oh, I'll be there in a few minutes. I'm running a little late. And she's like, I'm about to make my big speech. And she's valedictorian. And it's just dumb.
It's just kind of silly. I mean, it was kind of funny. And like, this is the moment in the movie when I realized I was going to have problems, that I was liking what Andrew Garfield was doing, but not liking the movie that they were putting it in.
Right.
You know, where it was like, you that sense of humor and like of action mixed with comedy is great, but like, get it in a better movie.
Right.
And then we kind of find out.
I thought too, the whole him being late for his graduation because he's saving the city thing is like very cliche and very.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's a comic book and it's comic books are cliche, but it's like, kind of, you could have come up with something different that he's late for.
That felt a little stale.
So as he's on the phone though with Gwen Stacy, he looks over at a police car that's driving next to him and he sees Dennis Leary, who is Gwen Stacy's father, sitting in the passenger seat. Now, I hadn't seen the first one.
Okay, yeah.
So I didn't know he was dead. So I'm like, okay. I knew he played her father in the first one. So I'm like, why is this like dramatic moment between them? Like they're staring at each other and the music goes like really dark and stuff. And I'm like, okay.
Is this
because he doesn't like Peter Parker and he knows he's Spider-Man? Like, I don't understand.
They handled this a little clunkily. Although it's both clunky and like assuming that you've seen the first one. So it's like, yeah, Gwen Stacy's dad knew that Peter Parker was Spider-Man. He didn't want his daughter dating Spider-Man because
But they do the flashback in a couple of scenes to cover that. I just wish they had done it like, I don't know, maybe just because I should have seen the first movie first, but
yeah.
At the same time, I was confused because it was like he was just sitting there. He wasn't like ghostly or anything. He was just sitting there. He's just a guy in a cop car.
Right.
Like, is that
right? Okay. And then you kind of like the movie very lazily does the thing from The Dark Knight of like, is Spider-Man a vigilante? Mm-hmm. You know, is this good or bad? But they do it in like 30 seconds with no resolution. Where at the end you're like, so are people cool with it or not? Right. I don't really know. Like it's almost like they felt like they needed to put that in, but it went nowhere. I kept thinking they
needed to put it in because there's never like the city turned on him or
they never turned on it. I was like, why this? It's never a problem in the rest of the movie. Yeah. So I'm like, I don't know why that really was an issue. And it just kind of silly. And he then he saves Jamie Foxx during this crash. Jamie Foxx is almost gonna have like a car land on him. And Spider-Man saves him, and he's like, hey, you know, he, like, sees his name tag, and he's like, Jamie Foxx's character is Max Dillon. He goes, hey, Max, you know, and Jamie Foxx is, Max is a huge Spider-Man fan, borderline obsessed fan.
He becomes obsessed after this, because Spider-Man says, like, hey, man, you're my eyes and ears out here, you know. He's, like, all, like, their friends or something. So he's and the fact that he knew his name, he's, like, he's just really, I guess, a guy who just is invisible, and no one knows his name.
Yeah.
So the fact that Spider-Man said his name, he's like, oh, Spider-Man, we're best friends.
I will come right up front and say, I think Jamie Foxx is a great actor. I mean, you can see a lot of great movies with Jamie Foxx being great. What they do with the Electro character in this movie is ridiculous and terrible and should have been apparent right on the page that they had a problem, that this was not going to work. It's his motivations. First of all, his motivations are rarely clear. And even when they are clear, they're stupid or make no sense. And it's never, I kept wondering if this was going to get better. It never does. Never
I like the concept of it, of this guy who's like, no, you know, everyone kind of mistreating and he was invisible and stuff. And he's obsessed with Spider-Man. And then he gets turned into this guy and he's like still like wants to be friends with Spider-Man. And then it turned, you know.
But they don't.
It was very clumsy how they did it, but I like the concept of what they're trying to do.
Maybe if they had turned it better, but the moment when it turns is done so poorly.
Yeah, it's in a second.
So
it's
like, poorly. And
the
so
problem is they
stupidly.
Waited so late in the movie that it's like they had to do it quickly at that point.
Right.
Because there's so many. Right. If they just focused on this, they could have done it quicker and gotten more into it. But there's so many, you know, subplots and stuff that they like spent too much time here, then here, then here, and you don't get much time to develop any one thing well enough. And the 2.5 hour runtime.
And then the biggest like open groan I had watching this was now they introduce the Harry Osborn character, which I actually sitting in my own living room went, because I just started thinking about Spider-Man 3 and how just badly the character was handled in the Sam Raimi trilogy. And I'm already seeing like, okay, so we've seen Paul Giamatti. Now you're throwing Electro in, and you're shoving Harry Osborn in, and we get a scene with Norman Osborn,
yeah,
as Harry's father, who just...
But you could tell what they were doing. Like, they made a very pointed and, like, specific effort to not ever have two bad guys at once.
Correct.
Because I'm sure of Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
So it was like he had three bad guys in here, but they were never existed at the same time.
Which you're right, because that definitely was a concerted choice.
Because like the poster had like all three bad guys on it, and you're expecting that like all him fighting three bad guys at once, but they made a very definite effort not to do that.
But it ends up separating these storylines to the point of the movie feels so jammed with different things going on.
They should have had it more like Spider-Man 3. That might have helped.
It might have helped.
If they had Green Goblin and Electro fighting at the same time, and then just... Right. Why is Paul Giamatti even in there? I don't know.
Why is he?
He's not even a bad guy in this.
So Norman Osborn is just this terrible father who's terrible to Harry Osborn. Even while he's dying, Harry Osborn seems like a terrible person, which is a choice.
A terrible haircut.
And Norman Osborn hands Harry this thing. He's like, hey, guess what? I'm dying. And you're dying, here's the thing. Hey, I'm dying. I'm turning into a literal goblin because of some weird genetic condition. Here's a thumb drive with all my attempts to stay alive. Oh, also, you're dying. Gotta go. And it happens. That's about how long the scene is.
Yeah.
The movie can't take time to do anything. So it introduces you to Harry Osborn. Dad dies. He's becoming a goblin. Whoa. Like, there's so many times where you just want to say, okay, pump the brakes, movie. Like, you got too much happening here. Cut to Jamie Foxx's Max Dillon, who works at Oscorp, which is Norman Osborn's company, and Ryan from The Office is his mean boss who makes him go fix a power outage. And Jamie Foxx basically pulls like a Doc Brown from the end of Back to the Future, where
first he's like, "It's my birthday. Can someone else do it?"
Yeah, and Ryan from The Office is like, "Nope, you're special. Go do it." He Doc Browns it, puts two cables together, gets electrocuted.
Well, first off, okay, so he's in this lab with a tank of electric eels.
Yeah.
And he climbs up above them to do this, to reconnect these cables. For some reason, that's his job.
Yeah.
And so, he gets electrocuted and then falls down, still holding the cables, falls through the catwalk or whatever, into the tank of live electric eels.
Yeah.
And just gets attacked. And attacked and attacked and attacked.
And I'm like, okay, so he's going to be a combination of an electric eel and an electric supervillain. I'm like, okay. I was just like, all right. Like, this is where I started being like, this is going to be a problematic. Like, this movie has some real problems going on. Harry Osborn.
I just get sick of seeing bad guys created in a lab, too. It's like...
Yeah. Well, it was it was because it felt very much like the Sandman story from Spider-Man 3.
Or Green Goblin from Spider-Man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or how was Doc Ock? Was that a laboratory too? I can't remember.
I can't remember in the movies how they handled that in Spider-Man 2.
I think it might have been in a lab. I can't remember. But it's like, especially in Spider-Man, it feels like every bad guy is like a lab accident.
That's true. Yeah, actually, that is a good point. It's, a lot of Spider-Man's villains do seem to, should all stay away from labs.
Yeah.
We now find out, like, 5 minutes after we met Harry Osborn and his dad died, now Harry Osborn is taking over Oscorp and is a royal jerk at his first meeting for no apparent reason. Because
he's, like, 18 and he's taking over a company, I think.
I guess. It just a really strange, like, way to handle, like, just him being a total jerk. And then we find out Peter Parker shows up somewhere.
Oh, we haven't even mentioned yet that Peter Parker and Gwen Stacy broke up after the graduation.
Yeah, that's right. That's like right. Yeah, Peter Parker breaks up with Gwen Stacy because
he sees Dennis Leary's ghost.
Yeah.
And he's like, I promised him that I would keep you safe or I wouldn't bring you into this, whatever. So he breaks up, or she breaks up with him.
She breaks up with you. Yeah.
And so they end. So then fast forward, all this stuff takes place that we've been talking about over the course of like a year.
Right. And then when we get a scene with Peter and Harry Osborn, where apparently Peter and Harry, in the world of this movie, were really close. But haven't
seen each other in like 8 years or something.
It sounds like a long time.
Yeah.
And then they reunite awkwardly.
Yeah, because Peter's like, he goes to him like, oh, I heard your father died. My dad's dead too. Let's bond over that.
And they become like best friends again. But again, like, and this feels like to Sony, like a structural problem, like, oh, we probably should have established Harry Osborn in the first movie and didn't. So now we have to like everything else in this movie, we have to compress a ton of stuff into a very short time frame. Okay. And then, and Electro, Jamie Foxx, is alive.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm trying to think of how they, or he just wakes up.
He's just like on a slab in a lab somewhere. And he's, I guess they thought he was dead, and he just like wakes up.
He just wakes up.
Pops back to life.
Yeah. And he's, he's acting like a wild animal, like just a like very Frankenstein like stumbling around. So and
at the same time, Peter has met back up with Gwen Stacy. She's called him and said like, "Hey, let's meet." And then she's like, "Hey, I want to be friends." And he's like, "Oh."
There's so much. I mean,
so they're like on this like kind of, I don't know. They got ice cream. They're like walking around and they're talking about being just friends and he still loves her and stuff. And then he like has a feeling. His spidey sense goes off.
Yeah.
And there's like he looks towards the, back towards the city, and this is when Electro's like stumbling into Times Square.
Yeah. Second movie. Yeah. We've done two movies recently with Times Square. And it's very, like, and this is all happening so fast. Like, we're not even that far into the movie and all of this is happening.
Yeah.
And Jamie Foxx just stumbles into Times Square and
he, like, lifts a grate.
Yeah.
Where there's, like, power lines under the street. And he's, like, just grabs them and he's, like, powering up.
And the cops are freaking out. And then Spider-Man shows up. And Jamie Foxx is being like it's a little like Frank, like they're clearly going for like a Frankenstein's monster kind of thing where he doesn't understand his power.
Yeah.
And then he and Spider-Man, like Spider-Man shows up.
Spider-Man's like, he's just talking him down like, "Hey, I remember you. Yeah, I met you in the street or whatever." And he's like, "Oh, you remember my name?" And he's like, I don't know what's happening to me and I don't want to hurt anybody. And then.
And Spider-Man's kind of trying to help him.
Yeah.
And then a police, tell me if I get this wrong, a police sniper takes a shot at Jamie Foxx.
Yeah.
And then,
and that turns the whole movie around.
Well, I also got the sense that he liked that the TV cameras.
Yeah, yeah.
He saw the TV cameras showing him.
He sees himself on all of the screens in Times Square, and he's like, "Oh, everyone can see me," and he likes that people are paying attention to him.
And then the cameras cut to Spider-Man.
He gets shot, and he's like, "Oh, you betrayed me, Spider-Man. You set me up." He's like, "No, I didn't set you up." And they like fight for a second, and Spider-Man like knocks him down or something, and then all the cameras cut to him, and everyone's cheering for Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And so then he sees Spider-Man on all the screens. He's like, "No, they're not paying attention to me anymore. You're stealing my thunder or whatever."
This is really nutty. I mean, like, so basically, he's the world's most insecure supervillain. I mean, like, this is a really shaky premise for why someone's becoming a supervillain.
Because he got a taste of like attention for a second, and now he's hungry for more.
Yeah.
So then he attacks Spider-Man because he's like angry that he got the attention.
Yeah. And Electro, like Jamie Foxx, who's like very Frankenstein, like also seems to have a great understanding of his power, that if he can just grab electrical cables and like jam them into his body, that's good for him. And so that's going around.
There's a big fight, and they fight for a bit, and
does he knock him out? Is this where Spider-Man knocks him out with the fire hose?
Yeah. And he's got the fire helmet on, which I thought was funny.
It was a funny little bit.
He turns around to the fireman. He's like, "Oh, good job, Frank. Good job, Peter," or whatever. He's like,
yeah,
you know, high-fiving these guys. So he knocks him out just by spraying with water.
Right.
This is after one of his web shooters, by the way, explodes.
Oh, that's right, because he got overpowered by electrical. Electricity. Yeah.
So he saves the day, and everyone's keen on Spider-Man again. Cities
but were they ever against
exit polls
him?
Have gone up on
Spider-Man. I guess like that must maybe that's a cut storyline too
because there's a newscast after that literally saying like he's like, "Oh, we in recent polls public opinion of Spider-Man has gone up," and it's like because it was he saved the city from this blue guy.
I get that feels like so out of left field. And then we cut to what seems like a whole other movie where Peter Parker is making like one of those like serial killer investigation movies where he's making like one of those.
I think he was just trying to figure out the plot of the movie.
That might have been, yeah.
And they're like, "Oh, let's put that in. That's good."
Where you have like all these pictures and like string running between things on a board and like photos and maps and stuff. And he's building one of those doing an investigation into the mystery of his parents, because he did get this bag from his, that's I guess it's from like his dad,
yeah,
that has some stuff in it. And like many things in this movie, like, so he builds up this whole thing. You're like, oh, it's this whole investigation to his parents' mystery. Well, not really. Like, not really. And Gwen Stacy, who, according to the world of this movie, just graduated from Oscorp, has a job, or I'm sorry, graduated from high school, has a job at Oscorp with her own desk.
Well, I think this is, like I said, like a year later.
Oh, is it? Okay, maybe I think like I missed a year, that.
They don't,
okay.
Well, they never say it, but I think just based on everything that happens,
okay,
and the conversations they have, I think it's been at least 6 or 7 months, but I think it's been like closer to a year since they broke
okay.
up, since they graduated.
Okay.
Still,
okay.
She got this job at Oscorp, which is...
She seems to have a pretty legit job at right. Oscorp, but she's also applying to
Oxford.
Oxford,
yeah.
Yeah. And something called the Ravenloft and Institute has Electro, Jamie Foxx, in it, where they are like keeping him in this device that holds him in, and they like bring him out of a tank of water just to mess with him.
Yeah, basically.
And like this scene is totally pointless other than to establish for you, because this is one of the crucial flaws with the whole Electro character. Jamie Foxx's character is not really built up as a villain.
Right.
As just sort of this misunderstood guy. So they have to, like, torture
him. Give him a reason to be a villain.
Give him a reason to be a villain. Because he really doesn't have any villain motivation.
Right.
So they just mess with
him.
He
just keeps saying stuff like, I want to kill Spider-Man because he turned on me or whatever.
Right. Which like, he really didn't.
Yeah.
Like, and that's not...
You have a really major misunderstanding of what happened.
Yeah. And you're just really insecure. So that then we go away. Then we go back to the storyline with the mystery of Peter's dad mm-hmm. and stuff going on with Mary Jane. And it's like, okay. Like, and it's just, it's, you get like whiplash trying to follow all this stuff. And then you're like, oh, okay, we're getting into this Peter's parents mystery. Nope. Now we're getting into Harry Osborn.
Yeah.
Harry Osborn becomes convinced he needs Spider-Man's blood to stay alive.
Yes.
Okay. Like, all right, and he's...
Yeah, somehow, just because the whole idea is that the spider venom from these radioactive spiders, whatever they were in this first one, is, like, the only thing that can help cure, because it gives Spider-Man regenerative capabilities. You know, he can self-heal. He's like, oh, that would help me. And
yeah.
Since the spiders are gone, I need Spider-Man's blood. So he gets a hold of Peter Parker, and he's like, hey... You know Spider-Man,
you
right?
You took a picture of Spider-Man, so you must know. This is definitely where this is tweaked, because I have to think in the original version of this movie, that's where Oscorp was doing surveillance of Peter Parker,
yeah.
And that must have been why Harry Osborn was going to
Maybe.
Peter Parker for this. But in the version of the movie we saw, it's just like, hey, you took a picture of Spider-Man once. Can you tell him I need his blood?
Right.
Wait, what? And you know,
so he. Peter Parker's like, I don't know, that's not such a good idea.
Yeah.
And this whole time thinking, why? Just give him your blood. Like,
what's the problem, dude?
Yeah, he's like, it might not be safe, it might kill you or whatever. And it's like, well, he's going to die anyways. Like he says, he keeps saying that, I'm going to die anyways. So.
Yeah, pretty low risk.
Yeah.
You know, not many good outcomes.
Yeah.
So then there's
this... So he's like, I'll try to get a hold of him.
I'll see what I can do.
Yeah.
So then Spider-Man shows up at Harry Osborn's apartment.
Yeah.
And he's like... Hey, I heard you wanted some of my blood. I'm here. Oh, actually, no. But the answer is no.
Yeah.
I should have. You know what? I should have said that first. I don't. You know what?
Yeah. He's like, why show up there just to say no? I'm not gonna do that.
Yeah, just to say no, and then tries to explain to Harry Osborn that I think this is really dangerous. Which Harry Osborn makes the same case he made earlier in the movie. He's like, I'm gonna die anyway.
Yeah.
Why not give me your blood?
I think something was cut out here too, because later on in the movie, when he's the Goblin, he figures out that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. And he says something like, oh, when you said Spider-Man said no, you meant you said no. But he never said Spider-Man said no. Spider-Man came and said no.
Yeah,
so there must have been like another scene cut out where
they
Peter Parker
never
like,
show
yeah.
how Harry Osborn puts it together
right.
that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. That's that is never clear. And there's clearly
it's basically
a bunch.
He's there with Gwen Stacy, and that was it.
Yeah, yeah. It's
apparently very easy to figure out who Spider-Man is.
This movie's budget had to have been like $200 million. I mean, so ramshackly like put together.
Yeah.
You know, for a $200 million movie.
Right.
So then we find out Gwen Stacy is going to go to Oxford.
She's still doing like interviews or whatever. She's still doing interviews.
Okay.
And she's told Peter that she might be going to England. He's all brooding about it.
And that gets Peter so mad that he rips down the giant serial killer like string map that we just saw him make, which is like, why did you make this? You didn't even need to make this. We just saw you make it. He rips it apart.
Yeah.
And in ripping it apart and throwing around all this stuff, the one bag he had from his dad's thing, he finds out this one little computerized device is actually loaded with subway tokens. And there's no information in it, but once Aunt May said he used to take, like somehow
he used to take the D train every day to work.
The D train to 6. Or
and he realized because in the bag there was like on a piece of paper said like Roosevelt something. And yeah. He figured out, oh, there's a secret subway for Roosevelt.
This so is figured. Must be. Yeah, this is so meaningless. In the cut of the movie we're seeing, this is so poorly done and just dumb. So he shows up to this secret subway station, which he basically just crawls into. He doesn't even have to Spider-Man his way in.
Right.
Which is fully lit up, functioning lights, everything seems to be functioning.
Yes.
He drops a token into the machine and a huge like secret subway car pops up that was like his dad's lab.
Yeah. And what happens here, he like watches a video on the computer that says like, oh, I gave them...
I'm not a traitor.
They got my formula, but secretly they need my blood.
Right. It's based on they got a DNA. And I'm like, why are... At the time when I'm watching this movie, I'm like, why are we seeing this whole secret lab, this subway car and all this? And I'm like... And after I read later that all this Oscorp stuff was a much bigger plot line in this movie, I'm like, well, maybe it made sense in that one, but it just seems like... It's like we're running a lot of pipe to get somewhere.
This could have been something that could have been cut out because that never goes anywhere. Then it's never like
he basically just watches a YouTube video.
Yeah,
It literally could have just been him. He could have cracked that thing open, and it could have been like, oh hey, well, here's this video.
Yeah.
Or like I don't, you know, it just doesn't go anywhere. and Harry Osborn, how does Harry Osborn somehow? This other woman who works at Oscorp, this...
Felicia,
assistant? Yeah, comes to him and says, hey, I think that some of that spider research...
Oh, I heard there was some... They took some venom out of the spiders before they destroyed them, so there's some venom left.
There may be some venom left. Somewhere in the building. And he's like, where? And she's like, I don't know. Why don't you try Googling special projects? So he does. He just Googles special projects and like tons of like crazy stuff comes up, including like videos of like Electro and all of this.
Yeah, that's when he finds out that the whole accident with Electro happened. It was covered up, but his name is on it. So it looks like he covered it up.
Right.
And just conveniently right at the moment, at that moment, the evil corporate guy comes
CEO guy comes in. Well, here, and there's, I don't know if there is an answer to this question. So did the Felicity woman, was she telling Harry to look in special projects?
I think in another cut of the movie, there's like a romantic thing going on between them too.
Okay. So you think that as soon as the Oscorp people saw that Harry had access to special projects, they were like, get him.
Maybe. Yeah.
Okay. So they're going to frame him for all this crazy stuff going on at Ravenloft. And it's at this point where I go, who is the bad guy in this movie? Harry.
Well, Electro is still tied up.
Electro is still tied up and basically is just a Frankenstein's monster. And Harry is a jerk, but he really just wants to live.
Yeah.
Who is your bad guy?
At this point, the whole movie is about Peter Parker missing Gwen Stacy.
Yeah, which we're not even really talking about that much because it's the best stuff in the movie.
Right.
Is these kind of cute scenes with Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone, like, kind of like, are they going to get back together or aren't they?
She said she's moving, and he said that she's moving, and...
Right.
So that's really all that's going on with Spider-Man or Peter Parker at this point.
So now Harry breaks into the Ravenloft, even though Oscorp seems to be aware.
Yes.
Like that Harry is a huge problem. He's able to just, well, at first I'm like, how can he just walk into this place? Then he has to taser some guards to get in.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets into Ravenloft and frees Electro.
Yeah, he just tells Electro, I need your help. You got to help me. If you help me, I'll get you Spider-Man. I just need his blood or whatever.
Yeah.
And Electro, the only reason Electro helps him is because he says he needs him.
You know what this reminded me of is a scene, and this is not a compliment. This is a scene, and a scene from Spider-Man 3 where Sandman and Venom team up. And at the end of the scene, you're like, these two characters really have no motivation to team up. Like, there's no point. Like, yeah. There's nothing in it for either of them to be in this partnership. And it felt very much like that. Like, if I'm...
Well, because the only reason that Harry needs Electro is just to get him back into Oscorp.
Right.
Which you would think he would know some other way to get in Oscorp since he just ran it 4 hours ago. He was running it.
Right.
He would know someone who could get him in the building or, you know.
Yeah.
Friend there or something.
It felt like just like, well, we have to now get these villains together. Although we're then immediately going to have to separate them.
Yeah, and they're never together again.
Never together again. Their only scenes together are right here. And the only way, this is how Harry Osborn eventually convinces Electro to work with him. He's like, I need you.
Yeah.
And Electro, now apparently the world's most insecure supervillain, is like, oh, someone needs me? I should team up with this guy. Wow, he wants me. Yeah. And then he's like, I had a friend once and it didn't work out. And Harry Osborn's like, me too. It's so dumb. I can't even... Oh, like no one's ever seen like a comic. Like this is such a dumb storyline. And now I'm trying to think of where they... Oh, yeah, okay, now I just have a bunch of notes. I'm still going on in my notes about the subway car secret lab, where I'm still fascinated by that, by why this movie spent any time on this.
So Electro gets him and Harry into the building, where they just go back into Harry's little office with where the evil suit guy is now, the CEO.
Yeah.
And they attack him and say, get me into special projects or... Electro will kill you, basically.
Yes.
So he says, oh, okay, I'll take it down there. And he's like, okay, Electro, go, you know, you're good to do whatever you want. Go get into the city, you know, grid or whatever.
Have at it. Or they're like, here, you can tap into, like, our power supply, and which is like, oh, okay. And, like, Electro now, who seems to not even be human, but he's just pure like energy. He just, like, literally disappears into an outlet. And... The Oscorp like CEO guy takes Harry down into special projects, and Harry has him inject him with the spider blood, right?
Yeah, he has him with the venom because he thinks that's gonna cure him, and then it just turns him into the Green Goblin or Hobgoblin. I don't know.
It turns him into the Green Goblin, and which immediately a door opens.
It's so freaking dumb. And first of all, there's. In this room, it's like this big round room, and there's like glass doors, and behind each door is like suits of like all these villains. Like you can see Doc Ock's arms there, and like the Vulture's wings or whatever. And there's like the Green Goblin suit,
right?
And it's like what?
Well, here's my question, and I really don't understand this. And I'm not complimenting the movie in that they leave it open ended. It's just confusing. Did that Oscorp CEO really want Harry to take this?
I don't think so, because he still at the end was like, this isn't what I... He just kind of runs away.
I guess so. Yeah, or like, he just kind of runs away, but then I'm like, why did they have a Green Goblin suit ready to go?
I think that was just from Norman. That was like a holdover from Norman Osborn, because this guy had no interest in it.
It's really confusing. It doesn't.
Yeah.
This is so poor. This is so confusing to handle.
So he mutates and immediately just crawls over to the suit and gets in the suit. And it's like, oh, I'm a bad guy now. I'm a villain.
Which
now.
Seems to fit him perfectly.
Yeah.
And everything's good to go. Like the glider, everything. We really needed to understand a little bit more of what was going on there. I mean, this is better handled in the Sam Raimi ones.
Absolutely.
When like you have that again super awkward scene where like that like the butler is like, here's your dad's, here's some stuff you didn't know. I'm gonna give you a bunch of exposition and then here's his suit.
Right.
And you know, and James Franco's like, whoa, what? Well, all right, I'll put it on. you know, that was that. This makes that look smooth.
Yeah.
So now we're also okay. So Electro is using up all the power in the city.
He basically just blows up a like power station, which right. just cuts all the power off the city. And Spider-Man and Gwen Stacy at this point are standing on top of a bridge. I don't know if it's a Brooklyn Bridge or whatever. They're like on top of one of the spires making out.
Yeah.
And he just told her like, oh, I'll go to England with you and I'll be yeah. Spider-Man over there. And
yeah.
then all the lights go out. And
they go all the lights and it's like, oh, no, all this stuff is happening. And meanwhile, we have they keep intercutting that two planes when the power
oh, God,
goes
this
out.
This isn't even worth mentioning.
I know. Well, I'm only mentioning it because anything. It's so funny in how removed from the movie it is.
As, like Spider-Man doesn't even know this is happening.
He never knows. He never knows.
Yeah.
That two planes are coming in and air traffic control has lost power.
They can't tell.
So they can't tell these two planes that they're both coming into the airport at the same time. Which this is so artificial.
They're not even coming to the airport again. They're just flying directly into one another.
Flying into it, and this is just for the audience. Right. This is not for anyone else. This yeah. is not for any other character
right.
in the movie.
Not at all.
So Peter Parker. So then, okay. So Peter, like Gwen Stacy, helps Peter Parker upgrade his web shooters.
Yeah, she's like, oh, don't remember high school? And if you magnetize a nail,
yeah.
it holds a charge or something.
Yeah.
So she's like, have you tried magnetizing your goo
web
shooters?
Yeah.
He's like, no, I haven't tried that yet.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah. So they do it immediately.
They do that there. And then she wants to come with him. And he's like, no. She's like, that's dumb. Like, you know, you should stay here.
Yeah. You're not a superhero.
Yeah. I'm a superhero. You're not. You're going to stay here. And he goes to the power plant. And
well, she keeps saying, like, I know the grid. I know how to turn it back on. I know. And it's like, why would she know that?
Yeah, what,
her and, father was a cop.
Well, she keeps referencing this whole thing that she worked for Oscorp, which again is where like the timeline of this movie is nuts.
Right.
So like
she worked for Oscorp, but she had a desk. She didn't know how to turn on the
in
grid.
Her year as an 18-year-old desk employee at Oscorp, like she's familiar with the grid.
Yeah.
I am. So Peter goes out there. You get this fight scene with Electro, which I almost don't even want to talk about because it's just so dumb.
It was such a way. It was so anticlimactic.
Yeah.
The one thing that was dumb about it, too, is just the end that's worth mentioning is they come up with this plan like, oh, I think Gwen Stacy, because she shows back up.
She hits Electro with a car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she says something along the lines of, oh, don't you, what happens to a battery when you overcharge it? And Spider-Man's like, it explodes.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah. So they're like, let's overcharge him. But it's like a battery is a physical thing. That's why it explodes, because it's to
and,
charge
and
like
everything else we've seen in the movie is he can take
right.
in as
Electro
much electricity as he
just,
wants.
He is just electricity. Electricity doesn't explode if you put
yeah.
more electricity into it.
This
it's just electricity.
Completely goes against everything
yeah.
they've shown us so far.
So because he's not a physical body, he's just
pure energy.
Pure energy. So this doesn't make yeah. any sense. But they come up with this whole plan where he like reconnects all the transformers or whatever with his webbing, and then
right.
at the right moment, she turns the grid back on. As he
and can I just say,
up.
By the way, throughout this, as the audience, we're getting like, oh, it's planes colliding in 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Again, they have no idea this
yeah.
is a deadline.
Right.
This is purely, this is like the scene in The Dark Knight where it's like if those boats are going to explode, except Batman knows about that.
Yeah.
This is just like the audience be like, no, this is really important that they do this right now. Just audience, you keep this in mind. They don't know anything about it. Yeah, but so yeah, then she flips.
Flips the switch, and he. And my favorite part too is like we were talking about with I Frankenstein. Jack was saying how they have like the meter, so you know how much energy.
Yeah.
They have a meter on the side of his head, so you can see it going up to red, and then it says like too much energy or something, and he explodes.
Why would he have that meter? What would
So then at this point, it's like okay, there's like 30 minutes left in this movie. They just killed the bad guy. Oh, that's right. Just then. Green Goblin comes flying in.
Ha ha ha!
Yeah.
I'm here too.
Yeah, it's like again, no two bad guys can exist at the same time. So now Electro's gone. Now Green Goblin can come in.
I groaned for the second time here. I'm like, oh god.
Yeah. So he like comes down. And he immediately figures out that Spider-Man is Peter Parker just because Gwen Stacy is there.
Right.
And he's like, Peter.
This is kind of done in a combination of ADR and like some weird camera angles.
Yeah.
And like, yeah.
And that's where he says, like, oh, when you said no, you meant, or when you said Spider-Man said no, you meant you said no.
Yeah.
And it's like, and then he's like, ah, you took away my hope, so now I'm going to take away yours. And he grabs Gwen Stacy and he like brings her to the top of a clock tower that's in the middle of a power station for some reason.
Yeah. And then you get a semi-cool, this is one of the only fight sequences in the movie I kind of liked, is the Green Goblin Spider-Man fight sequence in this clock tower because it's a very confined space and a lot's going on. And Peter and Spider-Man's trying to keep Gwen Stacy safe and also trying to fight the Green Goblin. There is a part of me that was, even as I'm watching this, which is like, why isn't he just getting Gwen Stacy out of here?
Right.
Like, but so that goes on. And then somehow, to get into the whole thing, like she's hanging by a web. And the web is about to be cut by the clockwork machinery.
Right.
And then, like, something happens where he punches, I don't know.
He's
basically,
got, like,
he's trying
Green
to hold
Goblin
it all
around
together.
The, around the neck with some webbing that's, like, attached to something else. And he's, like, trying to hold the clock, the gear so it won't turn. And it turns and it cuts the web. And then everything explodes for some reason. And Green Goblin goes flying off.
He goes flying off. And then Spider-Man starts diving down the clock tower. He does get
a web
on Gwen Stacy. And this was very confusing to me. So Gwen Stacy dies.
Yes.
Like, spoiler, Gwen Stacy dies. I don't understand how she died.
I think it's supposed to, well, I was saying the same thing because when he finally grabs her, like, she snaps back, like, just before she hits the ground. But I don't know if, like, her head hit the ground or if her neck just snaps when she snaps back.
Okay, because it was just such a severe
stopped all of a sudden.
I think that is it, but it was weird.
Because you hear a snapping sound. I don't know if it was her head hitting the ground or if it was just her neck snapping as it flung back.
I guess so, yeah.
Because I was reading, I didn't read the Spider-Man comics, I don't read comics, but I was reading, like, after she died in the comics, like, he was always, like, it haunted him as to whether, because she, like, got thrown off a bridge, and same thing, he, like, saved her, but it was too late. So he didn't know if she was dead first or if it was because her neck snapped when he stopped her.
Actually, you know what? You're right.
But they didn't touch on that in the movie.
I'll give the movie a little bit of credit. I forgot about that. You're right. That is a storyline in the original comics. So maybe this is a nice way of kind of honoring that of, like, because I was like, I thought it was just lazy. I'm like, oh, they needed Emma Stone to die pretty.
Right.
You know, like.
Well, and I didn't. Maybe they did in, like, the cut footage, but there was never a moment where he's like, I don't know if I was responsible for her death or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Never that moment.
Yeah.
Because then it just cuts to a funeral.
Cuts to a funeral. And we kind
of. I thought they were going to do, because they didn't show her really dead. She wasn't really bleeding or anything. She had some blood coming out of her nose. So I thought they were going to do a thing where it's like, oh, he's at a funeral and it's sad.
Yeah.
And she's dead. Oh, and then, like, she comes walking up and it's actually Harry's funeral or something. You know, like.
Right. Right.
Because that seems like something they would do in a Hollywood movie.
Actually, that does seem like that. Actually, that seems something that they would do in a Christopher Nolan movie, because it would be very actually kind of striking and more dramatic to do it that way.
And I was thinking, like, Hot Fuzz. They do it in the end of Hot Fuzz where you think that Nick Frost is dead, but it's actually, like, his mother's grave and he comes in with the flowers or whatever.
Right.
So I was waiting for them to do that, but it wasn't too. Because they never show her grave or anything or say anything about her being dead. Like, never. They never say anything about her being dead.
Right. Right. They show Peter hanging out at this, and they're going through the seasons at this cemetery. Now the movie gets, like, if you're watching this, we're kind of summarizing it. It's very confusing. The final, like, 10 minutes is like a crash course in confusion.
The final 10 minutes takes place over, like, 5 months.
Yes. Yes.
This movie takes place over, like, the course of, like, 2 years.
You're right. This must take place over, this is about 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least, like, a year and a half, 2 years. And so it's like, it just goes through, like, shots of him being sad. And actually, it might be, like, more like a year, because they show all that the season's changing in the cemetery.
Right.
And then he's, like, in the apartment with Aunt May, and she's, like, throwing or putting stuff in boxes from her dead husband. And she's like, oh, sometimes you just gotta let go. And there's all this news footage of, like, well, where's Spider-Man? We haven't seen Spider-Man in 5 months. There hasn't been blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, he's been gone for a while.
Yeah, and that's when he decides, like, oh, I can be Spider-Man again. Because at the same time, they cut to the Ravencroft or whatever institute where Harry is.
So Harry is now at Ravenloft.
Yeah.
And some guy, this mysterious guy is around there who seems to be working with Harry in a partnership. And this guy also has access to special projects at Oscorp.
Yes.
But tell me if I'm wrong, the CEO of Oscorp who was trying to frame Harry, that guy's still alive and fine, right?
You would think so, yeah.
So that, like, I'm trying not to think about some of this stuff because it doesn't make any sense. So, so Harry is working, Harry is in Ravenloft. Working with someone who has access to Oscorp, which is where we're seeing Dr. Octopus's tentacles and the vulture's wings, and there's other bays that we're not seeing. So they're kind of setting that up. And then Spider-Man...
Well, Harry says something like, oh, because they're talking about some special project they're working. And they're like, I think their plan is just to make supervillains. It's like, oh, with Spider-Man out of the way, now we can just take over the city or whatever. And,
right.
And he's like, oh, get Alexis Sereshkin off. That guy.
Get
the guy
this,
from the beginning of the movie.
Get this guy. Yeah. He seems
the guy who you totally forgot was even in this movie.
Yeah. And
get
and,
him. He'd be perfect for our first trial or whatever.
So then you see Paul Giamatti in this armored rhino suit.
Yeah. With like the worst like Russian accent ever, like
really over the top.
I'm going
Russian
to kill
accent.
You all with my rhino suit.
Yeah, and you know.
And my favorite part too is so he's like attacking, and they have like everything like barricaded off, and the cops are like shooting at him, and there's just like people, like mothers with their kids watching this, like
watching. He has machine guns
at them. He's shooting at them, and they're like just like this little kid in a Spider-Man outfit, and he's just like. At the barricade, like watching, and his mother's like, "Oh,
how
like,
are they watching this? You would be getting so far away from this
guy in a giant metal rhino suit is just rampaging."
This and kid pulls a Malcolm McDowell in Halloween 2 and somehow runs through the barricade, and he's a little Spider-Man suit on, and he like runs like into this scene, and is like there, like he's gonna fight the rhino as Spider-Man. And, like, the rhino kind of, like, taunts with him for a second. And I sort of got a kick out of this scene, the idea of this scene, but not how they executed it. Then the real Spider-Man is there, and he's like, hey, thanks, buddy. I got this one, you know.
It would have been good if they had actually established that Spider-Man hadn't been around for a while. Like, it was just a quick, like, scene where, like, a newscaster says, like, oh, he hasn't been around for a while. But if it was, like, more of the movie where Spider-Man wasn't around or something or...
Right. Right.
There's more established, more. And the fact that this new bad guy comes in, you're like, just end this movie. I don't want another bad guy.
Yeah, I know. And it's so, everything in this movie felt like a setup for something else.
Right.
Like it didn't feel, it never feels like an actual constructed movie.
You don't get the payoff of Green Goblin at all. Like he's in it for 2 minutes.
In fact, you never even see nothing. I mean, I think in maybe the rebuild of this movie, they must have realized at some point in the editing room that the Emma Stone, Andrew Garfield stuff was working really well. So they were kind of like trying to keep that as like the spine of the movie, honestly. Right. But like that you've got so much other stuff going on that's very problematic.
Yeah. So Spider-Man just, he punches the rhino and then it cuts to black.
He cuts to black. Like, oh, Spider-Man's back and rhino.
Like, really, that's what you brought Paul Giamatti in this movie for is...
Yeah.
For a scene at the beginning and then a scene at the end.
Well, and now, because, like, since this movie came out, all this information has come out that they're planning a Sinister Six movie, theoretically, the characters that we're seeing, which the Sinister Six in the Spider-Man comics is, like, Dr. Octopus, Vulture. So it appears that... And the Sinister Six movie is supposed to come out in 2 years... But now they're saying Spider-Man 3 isn't going to come out till 2018.
4 years from now?
4 years
from now. Is Andrew Garfield still going to be at 19-year-old?
He's going to be in that. But, I mean, all this movie did was set up a sequel. Why would you make a movie like this that is purely set up if you're not going to have a sequel ready? At the end of this, as I looked up stuff online, I'm like, well, they've got to be having, like, Spider-Man 3 must be, like, at most a year and a half away. They must be in fast-tracking that. And I'm looking at that going, 2018, that's insane.
Yeah. I mean, they should have done, if they had spent this movie setting up the Harry Osborn stuff.
Yes.
And then that was the bad guy for the next one. Like, you spent this movie setting it up, and then... At the end of the movie, maybe he becomes Green Goblin, or you hold it for the next movie.
I would have
then actually... Then the next movie, he's the bad guy, and you have the whole movie to explore that.
I would have been okay...
And his hatred for Spider-Man and him, you know, messing with him by hurting Gwen Stacy or hurting Aunt May or something.
I would have been good. If they had set up Electro as a real villain...
Yeah,
and kind of like there was stuff going on behind the scenes where you were seeing the foundations of, like, Harry Osborn's a Green Goblin, or you were getting hints of Sinister Six stuff or something like that, but, like... That's not the movie we got. And plus, this whole mystery of Peter's dad stuff just clouds everything.
Yeah, it was worthless. I think if they had just spent more time establishing Harry and why he hates Spider-Man, and then the next movie he becomes the villain.
They could have, they just, sense. Way too. It's really
to
like.
To have him just pop up at the end like, oh, I killed Gwen Stacy, and then done. It's like, okay.
Because Spider-Man 3, the Sam Raimi Spider-Man 3 isn't that old. What year is that from? 2007?
Probably 6.
Maybe 2006. We're not that far away from it. Watching this, I do feel like it would be like if somebody watched Spider-Man 3, the Sam Raimi one, and learned no lessons from it. You know, which is frustrating given how recent it is. Right. Like, you just sank this ship doing the thing you just did.
Yeah.
Very frustrating. I do, it's a one-on-one episode, but I do have a funny so wrong it's right question. Oh, so, Cody, you're going to get a crack at it. You will be the winner either way. There is a deleted ending, like a deleted post-credit scene from this. Have you read about this at all? Okay. A character from this movie who is presumed to be dead is shown with their head cryogenically frozen in the Oscorp secret or special projects division in a deleted ending scene. What character do you think it is?
My gut reaction would be Norman Osborn. I'm trying to think of anyone else who would be presumed dead. Because it wouldn't be Electro. He exploded. I'll go with Norman Osborn.
It was Norman Osborn. A lot of fans have criticized Sony for not including that.
Mm-hmm.
I actually give them a little credit, given how crazy this movie is. If you put that scene in, I'd be like, what are you talking about?
What would that have even...
What does that even mean? And apparently in the scene, that mysterious guy comes up and he opens one of the other doors and it's Norman Osborn's cryogenically frozen head. And he says, wake up, old friend.
For what, though?
What are you even trying to set up? I mean, I don't even know what you're going for at that point. Like, are you saying Norman Osborn might become the Green Goblin again? Like, because it did seem weird to me that Chris Cooper took this part for what is essentially one very
he's in like one of the flashback videos at one point, I think.
He is in a flashback video with
Dick Parker.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like, why did Chris Cooper want to do that? But like, if they had put that in, I would have been like, you got to be kidding me. Like, you don't need any more confusion. Right. You took confusion as far as you could go.
If I had seen this in the theater, though, there's no way I would have made it to the post-credit sequence. I would have been out of that theater.
No.
It's just like Transformers 4. I was out of that theater.
Well, it was even more confusing. In a complicated deal between Fox and Sony, there was a post-credit sequence, but it was a scene from X-Men Days of Future Past.
I heard something about that, yeah.
So a lot of people saw this scene and were like, what does that mean? Does this mean X-Men and Spider-Man are crossing over? Like, it wasn't very well established. So, right.
Well, then.
Would you recommend It's So Bad It's Good?
It's not so bad it's good. It's almost good.
It is bad. Almost good.
It's like there's a lot of stuff in there. It's like, man, if this was just edited differently or written a little differently, like you said, the stuff between Peter Parker and Gwen Stacy, I loved. They were great together. Had great chemistry and stuff. And you really felt for her when she's like, "I'm moving to England." And
I really was invested in the Peter Parker character, which is impressive. You know,
if they just made a movie with that's the thing. When I was watching it, is that when the Spider-Man stuff came up, I was kind of like deflated because I was like, get back to that Peter Parker and Gwen Stacy stuff because that was like fun.
Yeah.
Like if you had just done a movie about those two, just made like a romantic or a drama or something and cut the Spider-Man stuff out completely, it might have been a better movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really frustrating. I mean, this actually, I'll spin off. I don't know how you feel about this. I'm not even going to say it's, this isn't almost like, is it so bad it's good? Like, this is just a weird movie because a lot of it is so good and then it's like, great character work done in a disaster of an action film. So in a weird kind of way, I kind of liked it. Like
it was well made. I mean, it's well made. It's well shot. Well lit. Well, you know, I liked everything about it. The color, you know, the design and everything. And the action sequences were somewhat fun. Yeah, you know, I liked the sequence in Times Square with Electro. I thought that was interesting for the most part. And like I said, the Peter Parker Gwen Stacy stuff I loved. It was just it was the end really. That was so just horribly chopped up.
So messy. I would actually probably see I will probably see Spider-Man 3 4 years from now when they finally get together putting it together. Just because like the guts of it are so good. The casting is so good.
And I'll go back and watch the first one now. I'd always wanted to see the first one and I got around to it.
Yeah.
So I'll go back and watch that one now because it's the same director and stuff. So I'm assuming it's better. And I'll watch that one.
It can't be. It can't be as confusing. Yeah. Strange movie. This was an odd one to watch.
Yeah.
All right. We will be back soon with many more movies. We will have our Theodore Rex movie, our episode coming up pretty soon. That is one I would really, if there's two movies that people who like this show want to try to go out to see to be prepared for what's coming up, we're going to have Friday the 13th Part 8 coming up. We're going to have Fear No Evil coming up, which is a little tricky to find, but if you can see it, it's worth it. And down the road, it's going to be probably later on this year, we're going to have Theodore Rex coming up. We're already getting that one set, and that is well worth it, too. As always, if you get a chance, would love for you to leave us a review on iTunes. Those help with that wacky Apple algorithm. And you can follow Cody on Twitter at Cody A. Wolf, and the show at Windup Films on Twitter. I think that brings this one to a close. We will see you back here very soon. Have a good one.
See you.